Yes, I have to speak and say that I am not Adrian Wall, who was not able to come. And so at the last minute, so we, since we were already here, Sharon and I decided we would just take care of the program. Myself and my co-presenters do not have anything to disclose. Sharon and I were not sure who was going to speak first, and so we are somewhat overlapping. Decades of research have established that violence is a threat to physical and mental health, and the American College Association recognizes that sexual violence is a serious campus and public health issue. Despite campus violence prevention programs in the immediate and long-term mental health and physical health outcomes with violence, only a minority of our victims, as Sharon talked about, actually report seeking help from the formal sources, such as a healthcare team on campus or mental health services. Few college women report sexual assault to campus authorities or seek healthcare or mental health, and most really disclose to their friends. And when we looked at our sample from all three colleges, that was true. The friendships, the friends were the ones who had to pick up the pieces without help from either the college administration or from healthcare resources or mental health resources. Actually, we got a visit from a person who had been the dean of students, and that's was on her way out of that position. We have a new person on campus, and they were doing something on sexual assault. And they were ready to write the report when somebody said, "Have you spoken to Gail Spencer or Sharon Bryant? They do a lot of work on this." And so they trooped over to see us at the 11th hour and said, "What can you tell us about this? Because we've just put our RAs together and did focus groups." And we said, "Well, we can give you the data from our school. We can't give you the data from the other two schools." And we were able to help them with actual hard data findings that we had gotten from the school, which was very helpful for their report. However, when violence isn't reported, the physical and mental health needs of the victims go unmet, creating a burden on individuals and society, as Dr. Davila has spoken about. And early identification of sexual assault victims really links those victims to treatment and resources, and reporting to the healthcare providers on campus and personnel that are responsible for taking care of this issue is imperative for us to develop additional resources and meaningful resources. So the purpose of this part of the study was to examine the health behaviors associated with sexual assault as reported by a sample of college men and women at three different universities, and to discuss plans for prevention. And as Sharon said, we had 1,980 students participate in the study, 1,100 from the private college, 439 from the public university, and 431 from the historically black university. We used a descriptive correlational study to examine the health behaviors and related to sexual assault in this sample of college students. At both schools in the Northeast, we collected it using an online questionnaire, which was supported by both the college, by either the college or the university. And the historically black school did not have that ability, so they collected theirs through data, their data through pencil and paper. Thus, I looked at them to make sure that they were all relatively homogeneous in our findings, and I really didn't find any, there were no really significant differences between the responses of the three schools. The instruments that we used in the study were a demographic questionnaire, that was developed to gather background data from each of the students that included questions on age, gender, racial and ethnic background, parental income, social status, and the type of student, whether they were undergraduate or graduate. For all three schools, it was the majority of students were undergraduates. Then we used the sexual experience survey and victimization and perpetration version. And this measured four types of sexual victimization and sexual perpetration. It's widely used for both unwanted sexual acts of victimization and perpetration. And a question on the encouragement of or pressure of consuming alcohol with the intention of having sex was added to elicit more data on association of alcohol use and rape among college students as well. The reliability for the victimization was internal consistency of 0.74 and a retest approach at a 0.93, and that was for perpetration. For victimization, for perpetration, it was similar. It was 0.89 and a correlation of 0.93. However, for our studies today, we did not look at the perpetration. We will be looking at that, and one of our colleagues is actually looking at that. All three of us went, all three schools submitted our research protocol to the IRB or Human Subjects Research Committees on campus for approval. And as Sharon spoke, I'm not going to go over the gender because she's already gone. It's the same group. So, but as you can see, there were more females than males that participated. There was a shorter age span for females than for males, but the 43-year-old was an outlier. And we had many more undergraduate students than graduate students. For this presentation, I looked at two questions and on sexual assault. And one of them was, have you ever been raped? 5.7 of all the students identified that they had been raped, and they had been raped while they were students on campus. 5.9% of the females and 5.2% of males. I ran it for all schools, and there was no significant difference with regard to the percentage of rape. Have you ever had sexual intercourse when you did not want to because someone gave you alcohol or drugs? That was 6.7 for all, and 7.7% of the females answered yes, and 6.1% of the males answered yes. There was a significant difference, and this was really the only significant difference that we found among the three schools, and it was that the historically black university did not have, they had a much lower rate of identification of sexual intercourse in relationship to drugs and alcohol. And Sharon was saying that the historically black universities very frequently don't have alcohol on campus and are very negative about use of alcohol. And that may be what was a relationship for that. The health behaviors that we looked at with regard to this, the questions were, how would you rate your current physical health? Do you smoke cigarettes? We used an alcohol audit C question, which was three questions that had a that were merged and had that came up with a score. Have you been diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease? Do you have trouble concentrating? Do you have trouble falling asleep? And do reminders of it cause you to have physical reactions, such as sweating, trouble breathing, nausea, or a pounding heart? So the questions then were, what is the relationship between sexual violence and perceived health status of male and female students? What is the relationship between sexual violence and smoking habits of male and female college students? What is the relationship between sexual violence and drinking behaviors of male and female college students. What is the relationship between sexual violence and being diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease? And what is the relationship between sexual violence and physical reactions in male and female college students? For question one, what is the relationship between sexual violence and perceived health status of male and female college students? No significant relationship was found between the male and female college students who experienced sexual violence and their perceived health status. The majority of male and female students surveyed identified their health status as average, whether or not they had experienced sexual violence. And this may be dating me and showing my age, but I was shocked that the students really felt that their health was average. You know, at that age, I would have thought that they should have said it was good to excellent. But most of the students really said that they had they felt that their health was average. Now, whether average is the good, I don't know. But I was surprised by that. For question two, what is the relationship between sexual violence and smoking habits of male and female students? Only 5.7% of the total population on all three campuses smoked, which I think is a wonderful thing that we have done with regard to smoking habits on campus. Now, some of it is legislation. You know, most of our colleges don't allow smoking in the dorms, don't allow smoking in the classrooms, and don't allow smoking in most of the buildings. So that really makes a difference on smoking levels, and I think it has really decreased with that population. And what I found was, well, a greater percentage of both the males and females who had experienced sexual violence stated that they had smoked, 7.7 versus 5.9 for females, those who had been raped and those who hadn't, and 6.2% for males to 4.8 for males, there wasn't a significant difference found between the students and their smoking status. What is the relationship between sexual violence and drinking behaviors? There was no sexual significant relationship between the sexual violence, rape, and drinking behaviors for male and female college students. However, in both males and females, the more the student drank, the greater the risk was. And for males, it went from a low of those males who had been raped went from 10.5 that they didn't drink to 73.7 that they did drink. Now, and the same with females. 0% for females went to 42.6 who drank and 57.4 who drank, to the level of misuse of alcohol. And what was shocking to me, and I think really is telling, that one of the reasons that this was not found to be significant was that everybody drank to those levels. 68% of the females and 59% of the males drank to the level of alcohol misuse, not significantly different among the three colleges. We have a drinking problem on campus, and to a level of alcohol misuse. And when we look at the relationships that we expect with drinking and not unwanted sexual behaviors, we really have to think about what we're doing and how we need to address the misuse of alcohol on our college campuses. So we did have a different answer in the case of alcohol use for both males and females when sexual intercourse occurred due to the student being given alcohol and drugs. And as the amount of alcohol increased from not drinking to alcohol misuse, the agreement with this question increased. And it was true for both, again, for both. However, neither the males or females were found to be significant, even with the drinking as a result of the sexual violence as a result of the drinking. However, a significant relationship was found for the total group who answered yes. So when we put all of the group, both the males and females together, we found that alcohol misuse did become somewhat significant. For question four, what is the relationship between sexual violence and being diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease? A significant relationship was found with sexual violence when it was rape, when the student identified it as rape, and being diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease for female college students, and that was significant. The trend was found for male students, but it was not statistically significant. No significant relationship was found between sexual violence when it was unwanted sexual intercourse due to the student being given alcohol, drugs, and then being diagnosed with sexually transmitted disease for both males and females. Finally, our fifth question, and really I added the fifth question late in when I was preparing this because I was so upset by the fact that they all thought they had average health that I felt like I needed to look at some of their health behaviors and did it really make a difference. And when I went into the data and began to look at that, I really found significant relationships. So a significant relationship was found between sexual violence, rape, and their ability to concentrate. And, you know, this is not profound. This is something we would expect to find, but we really need to be looking at this, and we need to be looking at it with changes in behaviors in students and then following up on that. A significant relationship was found between sexual violence, rape, and being able to fall asleep for both males and females. And a significant relationship was found between sexual violence, rape, and physical reactions, and that's where they had the sweating, the heartbeat, that type of thing. The final question we had was what is the relationship between sexual violence when it was unwanted sex due to alcohol and drugs and physical reactions? And interestingly, with this, the unwanted sex due to alcohol and drugs was significant for males, but not for females. And barely significant. It rose to the level of questionable significance, but at least we thought we need to look at that then. And a significant relationship was found between sexual violence and unwanted sex and not being able to fall asleep, to having memories of this. And finally, a significant relationship was found between sexual violence and physical reactions of sweating and trouble breathing, nausea and pounding heart for both males and female students. So a summary of our our findings were that two health behaviors were not found to be significantly related to sexual violence, and they were smoking and the fact that we had so few students who were smoking and perception of their health status, with everybody thinking they had average health. The three health behaviors that were found to be significantly related were their drinking behaviors, their sexually transmitted infections, and their physical reactions, whether they be sleeping, ability to sleep, concentration, or their physical responses. Alcohol misuse was found to be really a significant problem on all three campuses. And if you would talk to our health educators, they would say, oh, we do all these programs on drinking on campus and drinking to misuse on campus. But do we do anything that makes it undesirable? You know, we haven't gotten to that point of saying, this is a problem and we really need to address it. Because students learn to drink at college. And if they haven't learned before, they certainly have access. And even though we have laws that say they don't drink until they're 21, the bars in the town really don't care how old they are as long as they don't get caught. Alcohol misuse needs to be addressed on college campuses with high-risk groups, particularly with freshmen. During freshman orientation, alcohol misuse should be really hit hard because this is when the first time they're out of their parents' control and free to be. And so this is that problem. And then programs that tell them of the increased risk of unwanted sexual intercourse due to alcohol needs to be reinforced by their RAs in their dormitory programs, particularly with freshmen. Sexually transmitted disease was found to be significantly related to rape. Students need to be encouraged and supported to go to the university health services to be checked for sexually transmitted disease, and programs regarding no means no need to be targeted at the high-risk groups, the freshmen, the fraternities and sororities, and the athletes. Physical symptoms, while no significant relationship was found between perceived health status, physical symptoms after sexual violence were all found to be significant. Health service personnel must be prepared to make connections between physical symptoms, poor concentration, sleep problems, physical symptoms related to anxiety, and sexual violence. And they need to be sensitive and not worry about being intrusive. And health centers need to provide a safe, inclusive environment that is perceived as welcoming to students. Thank you. Do we have questions? Okay. Oscar?
Yeah, the interesting question, about the perceived health status, was that at all based, you think, on mental or I would say perceptions of mental health and as a result either pre or post sexual violence experience, or meaning if an individual stated that their health was average, was that
we really haven't. This is a large project between three schools, and we've all been out doing the beginning part of it. But I think that's a very good thing that we need to look at with regard to perceived health and what they say is their mental health as well. And doing some correlations with that. Right, because we really need to look at that. Yes, and they were all average too. Everybody was average. Everybody was, I mean, not everybody. I mean, we had people that were, but the majority were average.
Now I get it. So it would be interesting to find out what their definition of average is. And I guess the other question is, just because you have an issue with literacy and understanding what terms mean, was rape defined?
Yeah. Rape was defined in the questionnaire,
okay.
Very clearly.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for this excellent presentation. All the excellent presentations, I really love how they dovetail. And one thing I want to follow up on of the study that was, based on the college campuses, is dovetail with Dr. Donald, mm-hmm. talked about legal approaches.
Right.
Like you said, it's the criminal offense. And so, did you ask if the students reported it, or
right.
We need to move it up to the policy.
Yes, exactly. Actually, on our campus, they've changed, the dean of students has changed, and they've hired someone just to deal with intimate partner violence. That's her whole job. And so I think that will make a difference on our campus. And so it will be interesting to see how that changes things.
I'm also part of that campus, and I've talked to a lot of students, and I can honestly say that Gail is right, there is a lot of drinking. And primarily from what the students tell me in freshman and sophomore year, falls off junior and senior year, and it kind of doesn't happen that much. And I wonder if their perception of their health has everything to do with the alcohol and the fact that they don't feel very well in opposition to,
orientation, but some of them, because of alcoholism, became into play, they weren't sure of the sexual assault, and that over time they were able to then get into the physical symptoms, and they were able to, they noticed that they weren't able to concentrate or they were having issues with school, and so over time they started to go back to the sexual assault, sexual assault program, but they were weeks later until other problems started developing. And I was wondering if it was that something that we still were able to
We didn't, because it was the question asked, were you raped during your college experience? You know, we don't have any information about when that occurred, but I think that we all see that as, you know, when new students come on campus, everything that can go wrong to them in a negative often does go wrong because they haven't gotten their feel, they don't have their support system, you know, all those kinds of things that we know are protective aren't in place yet. And so that's really why we're so concerned about the fact that we really need to get this dating violence being something that they need to be aware of and do that first week before school starts, before campus starts. And that also gives them a message that says, this campus is not, you know, is not going to permit this. This is not going to be an acceptable thing. So it starts right off if it's right in their face. And we haven't done that yet, but I have hopes that Sharon and I are going to make sure that we visit the new intimate partner person so she knows who we are and we know who she is, and maybe we can work together.
I just wonder if I agree with all your conclusions, when you're asking your question, whether you can move the students from just being the people that you're requiring things of, but move them into buying into being part of the solution and include questions of what would you tell a new person coming in to help them avoid unwanted sex or something like that, something that would help them, you know, kind of buy into the idea that they're part of the solution.
That's a really good idea because we have a health education program on campus that have these, I call them the minions of people that are part of the student body who go over with little iPods that actually they ask questions and they engage in health promotion behavior discussion with students, and they're all over the campus. So that would be a wonderful thing. We could get started with that.
I can speak on the latter portion of your findings to complete success guides. One of the working in the local health department, our biggest concern really is the higher risk SDIs in the 20 to 29 population and immediately following them as far as, you know, covering percentage of the last 6 years is the 15 to 19. So you're really capturing a huge concern is your college age and those who are going to college.
Right.
And the surprising part of the reason I found itself is that one of the Massachusetts IB programs did a survey on students' sexual practices. And it was very quite revealing the degree of sexual practices that exists, which coupled with, as you mentioned, the alcohol usage, can really have a large impact on the rate of STIs that unfortunately is pervasive. And I know that New York State has changed their laws or the STI reporting laws. If an individual lives on campus or in another area for about a week, they no longer report to the county where they are with their permanent residence there in their location. So in those schools, for example, the rate of STIs would go up in that county versus where they originally came from. So, long-winded question, of course, the question that I really have is there any greater information that continues down in the STI component? Because we know it's critical within that population. It's a critical, important dynamic, and it does play a major role in their overall health status, women and males as well, moving forward.
Yeah, we have STD. Or STI statistics from this for everybody on campus, anybody that reported that they were asked about whether they had had a sexually transmitted infection. So we would have that kind of information.
Does your question about STI infection relate to prior to or like in the time frame at all? Because I know in the high school, you know, many of my students have STI. So the question that you're asking, did it relate to their time on campus, or could they have had an STI when they were 16, 17?
Those questions were specific to their time on campus.
Okay.
There were questions about whether they had been, and we haven't really even touched that data, about whether they had had they'd been sexually molested as children or as adolescents prior to their, and as I say, we've just kind of scratched it. This is a large data set that has a lot of information on it. We haven't had time to get really into the in-depth of it, but we all have graduate students involved in it as well, so. Thank you, and thank you for your model. I know those circular models from community health, but I haven't seen one done with domestic violence. So I was very interested in that.
Yeah.